The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
What's up, party people? Welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lynn Ozawi. And are y'all ready for a good time? Oh, I can do better. Wait, I can do better. Hang on. Y'all ready for a good time?
The southern accent I take, Lynn?
Yes.
Maybe a little nod to our guest.
Yeah, it sure is, Julie. We got Hoffer on the pod.
A Hoffer? That's right. Our awesome guest this week, soon-to-be Women's Basketball Hall of Famer, ESPN analyst and colleague Carolyn Peck in Woo-hoo. The house. And Carolyn, or Peck as I call her, better than Pecker, let's be clear, played collegiate basketball at Vanderbilt University and eventually became a coach at the collegiate level, starting as an assistant at the University of Tennessee for the legendary Pat Summitt in 1999 as head coach at Purdue. She became the first Black woman in that role to win a Division I women's NCAA championship and, at 33, the youngest women's basketball head coach to win a Division I title. That's Carolyn Peck. She's had a longtime career with ESPN as a color commentator and analyst, and was part of the ESPN crew throughout March Madness. You saw her all over the TV and at the Women's Final Four. And in this episode, we may or may not debate the ridiculousness of Kim Mulkey's outfits. Most important, she is getting inducted into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame on April 29th, and it's right near her hometown in Knoxville, Tennessee. Boom! So, get comfortable listening. It's Carolyn Peck. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason? Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com. Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on trailblazing women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time finding the joy in life. We're smiling so bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling all right, get comfortable, listen in. It's Laughter Permitted.
I'm going to gush real quick before we start. I really love you and Courtney Lyle as Aww. A tag team.
I love Courtney. I think she is fantastic. And she's one of the smartest women I know.
Oh, she's the future. She's so good. And I love the two of you together.
I'm a big Lynn fan now.
Lynn!
Big hearts to Lynn.
Peck, we are going to have you set the scene. Where you're at, what you're doing, how many bottles of wine you have opened, all those things.
Well, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. Mm. I am in my
I love Nashville.
Converted second bedroom to studio hence the whole COVID that never went back to a bedroom. It is just a little after 2 o'clock, so no bottles of wine are open yet, but you're on the clock. And I am so excited to be here with the two of you.
Aww. Can I just say, I would never get tired of your cute little Tennessee draw. Oh, it's so cute.
I have lived in Indiana. I have lived in Japan. I have lived in Italy. And can you imagine this Southern drawl speaking Japanese?
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay. So do you know what I discovered in thinking about our history? Which what? I haven't seen you in a long time, and that makes me sad. But I quickly realized that you and I share a love of telling stories about our moms. Because I'm always bagging on my mom in a good way. Not bagging. That's not a good word.
Yeah.
I'm sharing loving stories about my mother and funny stories. And I told Lynn, I would love for you if you would open up. Because I was like, I still think of Peck telling me this story. And I still giggle out loud when you're telling me the story. Do you know which one I'm talking to? When she was in the stands and you were coaching at Purdue? She's like,
well, was it the one when I was coaching at Purdue or when I was playing in high school and she was holding up the cards?
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
We'll take both.
No, we'll take both.
Well, when I was in high school, my best friend was the manager. And like, I never went anywhere with Lee to this day. We've been friends since we were 5 years old. But she was a manager. But we're playing a big rivalry. We were playing Cock County. And so, you know, the stands are full and everybody's rocking. They're into it. And so I go down and I make a play and I score and my mom holds up an 8. Now I'm number 24. So I'm really not understanding what's going on. Then come down the other end, the ref calls a foul. And my mom holds up a 2. Like, what is that? So at a timeout, I go to Lee and I'm like, Lee, go find out what my mom's doing. And so Lee goes over there and she comes back and she has tears in her eyes. She's laughing so hard. I go, okay, what's happening? She said, your mom is ranking the officials and your shots. So she had prepared a whole stack of numbers to hold those up.
No so way. Good.
Oh yeah. Jeez. And then when I was coaching, like, this was my mom's favorite thing to do because she would wait for me outside the locker room, which would be, you know, when I'd come out and then I'd be ready to leave. And so she's standing outside. And so I'm making small talk with other people. And here come the officials walking by. And my mom goes, wait, excuse me. Stops the officials and then looks at them and says, I'm going to pray for you tonight. I'm like, Mom, I will never get another call the rest of my career. That might be why I can't get another coaching job, because my mom's got a reputation.
Okay, tell the one about her in the stands when you were coaching. Do you remember this one?
Which one?
When you might have been saying something she didn't want you to say, swearing.
Oh, when I got the technical?
Tell that one. I don't want to give it away.
Well, I don't really cuss at the officials a lot. I don't. Uh-huh. And I think we were playing Tennessee. And I, you know, yelled at the official. I got a technical and I turn around and my mom's sitting right behind me. And I looked at her and I go, I didn't even cuss. Like, you better not have. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My mom was one that, look, she's all about willpower, right?
Yeah.
So when I was coaching at Purdue and they moved in with me during the season and I brought them with me, they travel with me. And so when I'm packing for every trip, she'd go, well, what are you going to wear? And I'm like, well, I think I'm going to wear a suit or da da da. Well, you need to wear a dress. I'm like, Mom, I squat. You really think it's appropriate for me? Well, you might need to stand up, but little girls need to see you wearing a dress. Now, that was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. But if my mom was going, more times than not, I had a skirt on.
So you're saying she liked Kim Mulkey's outfits, probably.
She will. Okay, so my mom and dad are in assisted living now, so they watch it on TV. And when I'm doing LSU games during the game, my mom will text me and say, what is she wearing?
Thank you. Exactly. Is she wearing? That was like, well, I was not a fan of that. No.
Well, when I think back on it, if I had, you know, somebody provide me clothes, and I might have been a little more outlandish.
Yeah, but not like that.
Because look at the attendance at LSU now.
Right.
I mean, people are following them at the final.
But that's because they're playing good basketball, not because of her damn outfits.
But you got them in the arena, so it has them something to talk about. And even somebody that hadn't seen them play goes, this woman's wearing a crazy outfit. Oh, and damn, her team is good.
Yeah. Mm.
So,
okay, I'm going to have my little riff.
Go for it. I might have a rebuttal to it, believe it or not.
Yeah. I could not stand the outfits because it's not about Kim Mulkey. It's about her players. And everything she was doing was eyes on me, tension on me. The grandkid was dressed the same. It's like, hey, guess what? I'm all for expression, but it shouldn't be about you. It's not about you, sister. Like, sit on the bench, do your thing, coach your team, win a national championship, and then make it about the players, not you. How about that? I got fired up. I got fired up watching her. I was like, why is it about her every time? I don't want to know about Kim Mulkey. I want to know about her players.
Okay, but Julie, I got this question for you. What do you think about, ever since COVID, some coaches have gone to just wearing practice gear on the sideline?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a coach to dress up. Is that what you mean? Like, they should look professional?
Yeah.
I'm fine with whatever coach wants to wear, they can wear.
Now, see, what I think is the respect of the game. When you're at practice, you dress for practice. When you come to a game, a player doesn't wear their practice gear. They wear a uniform. So when coaches come to coach, then they have to establish. And I think, look, you to be successful, you got to look successful. And I think, you know, because I know how I felt when I would dress for a game. I'm going to tell you, and this is conceited, but I would leave my bedroom or my hotel room and I'd go, oh, yeah, I'm ready to kick ass today. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an emotional thing, too. My little prep rally. Let me tell you one time at Purdue. So when, you know, if you've ever been to Mackey Arena, and we were averaging like 12,000 people. I mean, that place was always rocking.
That's awesome.
And, but when I first started coaching, I would go out and I'd watch the team warm up. And if we weren't making shots or the other team was making shots, just in warmups, I would freak out and go, oh gosh, oh no, we're not going to have a good game. Or, you know, the other team's really hot or whatever. So my assistant said, Carolyn, you have to stay in the locker room until 4 minutes. You can't come out until 4 minutes. So I'm like, okay. So I would go back in the locker room and wait those 4 minutes. So when the team was out on the court, I had the stereo rocking. I am in there having a jam session. I am dancing. I'm getting
it. I love it.
Well, the managers had forgotten to take something out on the court, and one of them bust in, and I am in mid-move. Like, I might even be twerking, but I was by myself. And they walk in, and I'm like, okay, if you tell anybody, you know, this will be your last game. This is a secret just between you and I.
Oh, I love it. Solo dance parties. I'm all in favor of those.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just so interested that you brought up the sideline wear, because I've been curious about it myself. You know, you see some coaches like a Dawn Staley, she has her style. And what I'm finding too is that then the assistant coaches typically follow suit. And that was even the case with LSU, where the assistant coaches had pretty outlandish outfits. I've really thought about this, and I went deep with myself about Kim Mulkey and what she wears. And what I came to is that, for better or worse, it gives her players the freedom to be who they are. she's putting herself out there in a way where she doesn't care what anyone says.
All right.
Doesn't care. And you saw that on the court, when, especially in the final, when those LSU players were hot and hitting shots, they were celebrating. They were pumping each other
up. But you don't think they'd have that even without the ridiculous outfits?
Okay, well, here's a disclaimer about Kim Mulkey. She doesn't pick her outfits out.
I know. So, but she says yes to it. You still get to say yay or nay. You're going to wear this outfit. No, I won't wear that outfit, actually. I have a person who does wardrobe, too. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'll never wear that, by the way.
Yeah. So, well, usually it comes down to two or three outfits that she has to choose from. Because at first, for the semifinal game when she had the feathers, she was saying no to that all along. And then Jennifer Roberts, that's on her staff, that usually is dressed to the nines as well, was like, this will draw so much attention, just wear it. And two of the designers that she gets her clothes from are LSU alum.
Yeah, I like that.
So she's playing homage to alum. So I give her that.
Yeah.
For, bringing some attention to them.
To your point, Julie, now we've spent several minutes talking about her clothes. You know, it's just like, it's tough. Now, when I do think of class on the sideline, besides you, Carolyn, someone who immediately comes to mind is Pat Summitt.
Oh, yeah. I used to pick up Pat's clothes.
Oh, I'd love to hear about this.
Oh, Pat. Okay. So Pat loved to wear St. John's.
Oh.
You know, the knit, I could not afford to wear. And then she would put on these shoes, and they were like school teacher shoes. And I'm like, Pat, no, you gotta, put the shoes with the outfit. And so I would always dog her about updating her wardrobe. Well, we were going to Montana. And so she didn't live far from the airport. And so we were, waiting on the team to all get there. And Pat usually swung in on two wheels because she would push it to the last minute. And we're going to Montana, right? And here comes Pat Summitt, head to toe in leather. Leather, vest, pants, cowboy boots. Like, she got all into it. Like, there's sides of Pat that people didn't even know that were so fun.
Wow.
She would. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But talk about class on the sideline.
Yeah.
100%. Look, she had the players. They weren't scared of her. They were they had great respect for her. The officials and the opposing team, they were scared of Pat.
Yeah. You grew up 30 minutes from University of Tennessee, yet you decided not to go to University of Tennessee and chose Vanderbilt instead.
Well, that's a whole long story, too.
I was looking at where Jefferson City was. I didn't realize you were that close to University of Tennessee where you grew up.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wait, you were like in the backyard.
Yeah.
Where
oh,
Pat
yeah.
was.
30 minutes away. At the time, they played in Stokely. And my parents would take me to go watch the Lady Vols play. I was a big Lady Vol fan. At the time, that women's basketball wasn't really on TV a lot. And at times, and this can make me sound really old, I'd listen to their games on the radio. But Pat was intimidating, but I loved her. She in recruiting and all, I loved talking to her. And then I spent a lot of time talking with one of her assistants that I will remain nameless, but I didn't really have a connection with. Mm-hmm. And Phil Lee was a coach at Vanderbilt. And he used to, we would set up, okay, because at the time, making a phone call to Nashville was long distance. And so we would set up times, and he couldn't call me. I had to call him. But I liked talking to him. I liked talking to his wife. He had two little daughters, and I loved talking to them. Teresa Phillips, it was Teresa Lawrence at the time, was the assistant coach. And this started back when I was sophomore in high school. And then they found out that they had at Vanderbilt a pre-engineering program that was offered to minority students. And so the summer before my senior year, he set up and I applied and I got in. So I got to spend the whole summer in Nashville in this pre-engineering program and kind of live the college life. And Vanderbilt has, 4,000 undergrad? It's not very big, where Tennessee has 48,000.
Yeah.
And look, growing up in Tennessee, walking a class up and down those hills was not appealing. And so I really liked what I, experienced, the small, intimate campus. And then when he came for his last home visit and he brought his wife, he called my whole family, my grandparents, my Aunt Barbara, my Uncle Dean, like they were all at my house. And so he gave the whole spiel. And my Aunt Barbara, now she's 5'3", and she is a spitfire, go after it. She controls the room. So after he finishes his spiel, then she goes, okay, everybody, let's just take a vote. Who thinks Carolyn should go to Vanderbilt? Everybody raise your hand. So everybody raised their hand. And, after he had given the whole spiel of when you go to Vanderbilt, when you graduate, you're going to have a job, you're going to be able to make this much money, you're going to have options. Yeah, come on. It was go win national championships or run a corporation. I was like, I'm kind of feeling a corporation. And and the other thing, too, Vanderbilt had never been to the NCAA tournament. And so it was an opportunity to go do something that Vanderbilt had never done before.
Well, and I see that anchor right above your left shoulder, too. So,
yeah, that was I'm in the Vanderbilt Hall of Fame.
Look at you. Multiple Hall of Fames. Congratulations, by the way. You're going in next week.
I only got my dress.
You do?
Yes.
Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Can you tell us what color?
Details?
Does it have feathers?
It has no feathers.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah. I'm not sure my mother will approve, so I'm not showing it to her until the day of.
Okay, good call. Good call.
But I
have your speech.
I'm sorry?
Do you have your speech?
I have my speech.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to stay within 7 minutes.
Oh,
yeah. I'm going to follow the rules on that. I've been there where people have gotten a mic and gone on and on and on. And listen, I know about these award ceremonies. There's the pre-cocktails and people can't wait to get to the post-cocktail. So your speech needs to be to the point, little entertaining, deliver a message, give your thank you and get to the after party.
Well, part of your coaching journey, as we were talking about, you were at Purdue University. There you make some history. In 1999, you become the first African-American to coach a women's Division I basketball national championship team. And, Peck, you were only 33 years old, which also made history as well, right?
Yeah. You should have seen me before I came on this podcast spraying to cover up my gray. But yeah.
Did you think then it would take nearly 20 years for another Black coach to win a national championship?
You know, Juliet, it's interesting that you bring that up. Back in 99, when we won it, one of the things that always kind of bothered me was that after we won it, it was over. It was done. They didn't put my players on talk shows. I wasn't invited on any talk shows. There were no grand endorsements. Mm-hmm. It was in the following years and Final Fours I would go to, other than the highlight that they put on the Jumbotron that like would review some of them, it occasionally might come on for a split second. But that championship was not important.
Yeah, it was like sandwich. Just as an outside fan, it was. It felt like it was sandwiched between UConn and Tennessee, and back and forth there.
Yeah, yeah. And so, It wasn't until, I think it was 18 years later, when Dawn Staley won hers and she pulled out the little twine, the piece of the net that I gave her, that then it became important again. Oh, yeah, Carolyn was the first, but it wasn't important the 18 years prior to. And so I'm really appreciative to Dawn Staley to remind people, because the first wasn't important until there was a second.
Right.
And yeah. I still, on Twitter at times, people refer to Dawn as winning the first national championship because they don't even remember what happened in 1999.
Interesting. What inspired you to cut that net down and then give a piece of that net? Tell that story. I don't want to tell it for you, but Dawn has shared that with us.
In 1995, I was at Tennessee. And we played Connecticut in the national championship and we lost. And so the next year I went to Kentucky, because when I was at Tennessee, I was a restricted earnings coach. I was only making $16,000 a year. So when Bernadette Maddox asked me to come to Kentucky to be her recruiting coordinator, and you go from making 16 to 36, that's a pretty big deal at that time. So I was like, yeah, I got to go full time. Well, we didn't have a great year at Kentucky, but we I went to the women's, to the Final Four that year, and Tennessee was back in the championship game. And after they had won, they were down on the floor, and I was sitting with all my friends in the Tennessee section during that game anyway. But after they won, Passion Thompson was one of the post players that I had worked with when I was at Tennessee. And so while they're on the floor celebrating, she calls me down on the floor. So I go down there to celebrate with them. You know, when your team, your kids, they're always your kids, even if you go somewhere else. And she walked up the ladder and I saw her cut two pieces of the net. And when she came down, she came straight over to me and she said, "Coach Peck, I'm going to give you a piece of the net and I want you to keep it until you win one of your own." Well, I kept that scraggly piece of net. I tied it on my shoe, and everywhere I went, when I went to Purdue, even as an assistant coach, if I got a new pair of sneakers, I tied that piece of net on there. So every day I looked at it, and that was my motivation, my goal. One day I'm going to win a national championship. And Nell Fortner was the head coach at Purdue, and that was our dream. When we went to Purdue, we took the administrators into Mackey Arena, and we said, "You look up right there. That's where we're going to hang a banner." Like, that was our vision when we went to Purdue. And then Nell went on to coach the Olympic team, and she recommended me for the job. And I'll tell you, I turned it down twice because I'm like, "Are you nuts?" I mean, I'd only been restricted earnings at Tennessee for 2 years, an assistant full-time at Kentucky for 1 year, an assistant at Purdue, and now I'm going to be the head coach in the Big Ten with a team that had previously already been to the Final Four. What? And I kept saying, "I'm not ready. I'm not ready." I called Pat. So I said, "Pat, they want me to be the head coach at Purdue." And she's like, "Well," and I said, "I'm not ready." And so I go on this whole thing of why I'm not ready. And then she looks, she stops and she goes, "Are you finished?" In the summit kind of way. And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Well, where do you want to go get ready? You want to go coach high school? You want to go junior college? You want to go mid-major or you want to start there?" So then I was like, "Well, she's kind of right." So, yeah.
Oh,
so
the wisdom
was
of Pat.
Kind of my motivation. So then, I coached at Purdue, coached in the pros, Florida, got back into TV. And then Dawn, when she was at Temple, liked what she was doing there and the players that she was getting there. Then she went to South Carolina, and then I was covering South Carolina and watching her and how she interacted with her players. And you guys know, I mean, you see coaches that do things the way you would like to see things done or you would like to do them. And she just had such a connection with her players, and she was squeezing blood out of a turnip and getting these players to play for her. And they loved her. You could tell it. And I was like, she's got the it. And I believe she's going to be the next one. So in 2015, after practice one day, I just went over and I had a card and I had put it in a card and I gave it to her. And I was like, you know, this meant something to me. And I hope that this will be a little motivation for you. And it was just a private moment between the two of us. And so she opened it and looked at it, gave me a big hug, thanked me for it. And then, you know, to me, that was it. You know, it was just something privately done. And even in 2017, when the Final Four was in Dallas, and I had asked ESPN to work it because I felt like Dawn was going to win it. And they were like, no, we don't have the budget. We don't need you there. So I'm back here in Nashville watching the game on television. And my husband and another couple, we are out at a bar watching it. We had a patio table that had a TV outside. And as the game's coming to an end, I start, you know, realizing, oh my God, she's going to do it. And so when they win, we're jumping around, celebrating, high-fiving everybody. You'd think I went to South Carolina, but you know, we were so excited that she had won. And then all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up and I'm getting all these text messages and all. And so then when I look at them and they were talking about the piece of the net that I gave Dawn. And because, you know, when you're watching on TV, you don't get to see the press conference. Right. And so come to find out later, then it was run when she came to the press conference, she pulled that piece of the net out.
Yeah.
And yep. Then for what she did to take that another step further, to then take her net and send it to every Black woman that was the head coach in Division One. Mm-hmm. I mean, she took it to a whole nother level. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it all started from the University of Tennessee player whose name was Passion Thompson.
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that. Thank you for sharing that. What an incredible story.
When I was, when I first got hired at Tennessee, I got invited to Black Coaches Association convention that was held in Florida. And when I walked into the hotel room and into the hotel lobby, there sat Vivian Stringer, George Ravlin, Nolan Richardson, John Chaney, Marion Washington, Marianna Freeman. Like, that was the Mount Rushmore of Black coaches to me. And they're all sitting at one table. And Coach Stringer called me over. She introduced me to everybody. And she said, Carolyn, you know that you are the first Black woman that Pat Summitt has hired. And I didn't realize that. I had, you know, I was a big fan of Sheila Collins, who played at Tennessee, but I didn't even really pay attention to what was or wasn't on her staff. And then she said to me, you know, with that opportunity comes great responsibility. And I thought that meant that I had to go out and do a good job and I had to win games. But, you know, later, you know, in 2017, when Dawn shared that piece of the net, I really felt like my responsibility wasn't what I did, but who I shared it with. And I think the responsibility was the sharing piece to that.
In a sense, it was this passing of the baton too.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you go run with it now.
Yeah.
And I believe in you.
Well, see, now Dawn... Okay, Dawn took a bad job and made it a good one because for so long, for Black women to get head coaching jobs, a lot of times it was jobs nobody else wanted or ones that would pay the very least that, you know, to be a head coach, you had to take that. Kenny Brooks at Virginia Tech, you know, how many coaches would go, oh, I'm dying to go to Virginia Tech? Well, what did he do? He took what most would look at a bad job and made it a good one.
Yeah.
You know, we had four Black coaches for the first time at the same time in the Sweet 16 this year. So now, and I'm giving you my speech for the Hall of Fame, but now administrators are taking their blinders off.
Yeah.
And you're not eliminating anybody, but you're broadening your scope of who potential candidates can be and just finding the best person. I mean, kudos to the administration at South Carolina and Virginia Tech. They didn't just hire somebody. They hired somebody gave them the resources, supported them, and helped them make those programs into winning ones.
But isn't it frustrating that it's taken so damn long to take those blinders off?
Well, you can spend time being frustrated, or you can take the momentum and build on it.
Wait, what oh, good that's it so mature. God.
You know me, Fowdy. I'm not one to spend a whole lot of time with negative energy. What good does it do? I can complain about the past, or I can help be building blocks for the future.
So good.
So what needs to happen going forward so there is more diversity at the coaching ranks?
Well, you look at Virginia has hired Coach Mox there, and she's, let me tell you something, keep an eye on Virginia because she's going to get it done. Yeah. And you look at Joni Taylor leaving Georgia and going to Texas A&M. And with all the movement that's happening and the recruiting, it's going to happen there. Look at what Adia Barnes has done out at Arizona. Like, there's opportunities. There are fresh, young ideas that are in the minds of administrators now. And they're coming to realize, okay, women's basketball is a revenue stream.
Yeah.
If we win, we can make some money off of this. And so now in looking at, okay, what would be, instead of what might turn off boosters, what might turn them on? Yeah. What might bring in some new boosters, some fresh money, some more support for this university? So I think that's what's happening now. I mean, you look at the ratings of the Final Four. What, it reached 9 million, topped out at like 12 point something million viewers in the national championship game. And Connecticut and Tennessee and Stanford were not playing.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. That, it was almost refreshing to have these new storylines. For me, I was saying this to Julie ahead of this interview. For me, the Final Four matchup of Iowa, South Carolina was just, to me, that was almost the final. That was such good basketball, such a good game. And it kind of felt good that UConn wasn't the team that was looking to be upset. It felt like the game is moving in a new chapter, a new direction.
Wasn't it the first time in I want to say like 17 years that one of those three hadn't been in the Final Four? I don't know
that's
if that
right.
17 is right, but I think I read that somewhere. I was like, whoa. Yeah. And that's a great point. And the numbers still, you were up 55% year over year. Every round seeing double digit increases.
Well, and what happened? They took their blinders off. I mean, when you look at the coverage this past season of the prime games that were on, they weren't all Connecticut. They weren't all Tennessee. They weren't all Stanford. I mean, you had Louisville was on TV. South Carolina was on TV. Maryland was on North Carolina was on TV. So fans got exposure to other programs and other great talent.
Yeah.
There's so much talent across the country. And so when you expose people to that, because I go to different cities, and before the expansion of more exposure of women's basketball, there'd be fans, I'd be in restaurants and they'd go, "What are you in town for? Is there a game today?" Because it wouldn't even be on their local news.
Yeah.
Well, now it has to be.
Yeah.
Because these women are making you talk about them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And here I just thought it was the feathers.
See? The feathers may bring you in, but the talent on the floor will keep you there.
Well, I think this is the first time that I've heard you, Julie, talk about women's college basketball, as far as having this awareness of kind of this, let's go. Like, this is where it needs to be.
Well, I always have watched it, but this year in it running on ABC, and it just felt like, okay, it's about damn time that we put it on the network it belongs on. There's exposure, there's visibility. I mean, it was the Sedona Prince revelation of last year when you're like, what are we doing? That was so obvious. Like, you're burying this gold mine that has all this potential. It's every sports story, though, right? It's like us back in the day going, I don't care whether you love or hate it. You're missing out on this gold mine. There's money you're leaving on the table. There's all this awareness you should be getting out. Anyways, I'll go on another rant. But it just, it shocks me that then people are surprised that it pulls in 10 million.
That's something I'm getting tired of. Why are people, this is nothing new. This is incredible basketball. And it's like, wow, the ratings are really good. Well, yeah, because it's incredible basketball.
Well, I'm going to tell you, there's a silver lining to COVID. Mm. And the silver lining has been, okay, when all the other sports had to shut down. The WNBA was able to still be played. And because there was nothing else to put on TV, they had to put on women's basketball. Well, then blinders were taken off and they were like, oh, people kind of do like watching women's basketball. And so because of that, and because of COVID, the NCAA's inequities of the Final Four was exposed. And so social media caught fire of that because you were able, I felt like women's basketball was able to be kept squashed and saying, we're not going to put it on TV because it won't rate. It won't bring in as much money as the men do. And it's not a men versus women. It's just make room. And so because they finally realized, you know what? We can, because the only way anything's going to happen is if it can make money, right? And so that's why, you know, when we aren't making as much as the men, even as broadcasters, coaches weren't making as much money as the men because they said, well, they don't, you just don't rate, you don't bring in the revenue. Well, we don't get the same marketing dollars. We didn't get the same space. And now when you look at what South Carolina has done, what LSU has done, Tennessee's been doing it for years and why people didn't take notice of that. Stanford has done it with the draw that they have at the farm. If you expose it and you make it important and you tell people this is something that they need to see, you know what? They believe it.
Agreed. We just solved the world's problems.
Where's a wall? I want to run through it.
All solved. Everyone's watching. Everyone's wearing feathers. Everyone is coming. I want to know the color of your dress, and you're not going to tell me.
Nope. Nope. You got to come and see.
Any sequins?
No sequins.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait.
Heels or sneaks?
Heels until the after party.
Okay.
Then you're going... Then you're going to get it on.
Speaking of getting it on.
Are you ready for the Lynn game?
Let's go.
Let's go.
What is your noisemaker for us, Carolyn?
Oh, that's my whistle.
Yes. Loud and clear.
Whoa, that's coming in hot. That's going to be coming a good one. Hot.
Okay, so wait. One more time, Carolyn. I'm on the line.
I got to get a whistle.
Oh, it's great.
Because listen to this. Your whistle and my... I will say this was given to me by 11-year-old Leo. Thank you, Leo.
Aww. Well,
it was actually given to Swaggy, and I said, Swaggy. This is Elizabeth Jones Child's Stanford teammate, her son. They were visiting. He brought it for Swaggy.
Oh, that's...
I was like, oh, that's going to be perfect for my game. I'm out of squeaky toys.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh. Got different options. And the visual of this is, I'm going to say green pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, green pig with blue spots.
Go green machine.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh. You are you going to sing
it? All right, Carolyn.
The rules of the game are, it's multiple choice, best of five questions wins. Theme is always different. And today's theme, I'm kind of throwing a bone to Julie, and this is a bit of a social experiment because I often will do pop culture type trivia where either it's the 70s, I don't think I've done 70s, but maybe 80s or 90s. And anything in the past with trivia doesn't seem to like stick with Julie. So the theme of this game is recent history in pop culture. I'm just curious if
you're better.
If your short-term memory might okay.
No, it's probably worse.
So all of the questions are about things that have happened in pop culture so far this year in 2023.
Are you good with pop culture, Peck?
I don't know. Let's try it.
I love it.
Question one. What movie won the Academy Award for Best Picture this year? Was it A, Top Gun Maverick? B, Everything Everywhere, Julie?
Everything Everywhere, something, something. B.
I'll give it to you. It was B.
Have you seen it? Nope, haven't seen it. Have you?
No.
Everything either. Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, I heard it's very jittery. Like high energy, frenetic. Frenetic is a better word.
That is
really good.
The only thing I ever watch, I have watched Madam Secretary 150,000 times.
That's a good one.
Interesting.
One. Yeah. Okay. That's really good.
Question two. In January, who came out with a memoir that set the Guinness World Record for the fastest selling nonfiction book of all time? Was it A, Michelle Obama? B, Oprah? Or C, Prince Harry? Carolyn.
So Michelle Obama.
Incorrect.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Julie.
Oprah.
Incorrect.
Oh, what? How did you give a man as an answer?
Harry. Prince Harry.
Correct, Prince Harry, but you unfortunately do not get a point for that, Carolyn. Julie, all anyone talked about at your house for like a month straight was Spare.
I know, but I was like, she's not going to have a man as an answer. We don't do men on this podcast. That sounded weird.
Yeah, it did.
We love you, men. We just don't have many men on the podcast. It's not to say we can't have a trivia question about men. I guess there are men in this life, but I just thought you were better than that, Lynn. I don't know.
Question three. What is the name of Taylor Swift's current tour? Is it A, the Reputation Tour? B, the Eras Tour? Or C, the Journey Tour?
Oh, I should know this. I should know this because, God, Julie. Izzy has wanted to go to this so badly. I'm going with C, the Journeys Tour.
Incorrect. Carolyn, for the steal, is it either A, the Reputation Tour, or B, the Eras Tour?
A, the Reputation Tour.
Incorrect. What is the score? Right. Is it one
to zero?
One still, one to zero, going into question four.
Okay.
Who directed the movie Air about the original, the origin?
Julie. Ben Affleck.
Correct.
Thank you. I know my pop culture. So that's just heard him on Smartless. Great, great podcast.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of that. Otherwise, I would have done a different question. Mm-hmm. I try and stack it in the favor of the guests, if I'm being honest. But
yeah, we should have talked beforehand.
Yeah, next time. I think technically Julie wins, but let's do, how about we say that one counts for three sports.
Day. Okay.
Three points.
3 points.
Thank you. Question five, who sings the uber popular song Flowers, which came out on January 12th? Is it A, Sam Smith, B, Dua Lipa, or C, Miley Cyrus?
I know, but I don't want to win 5-0. Lynn, another one you should know. We were in the car discussing this.
Well, this is kind of part of my test. I was curious if you had any short-term memory, and I think you have a little bit. Yeah. Within a 1 week span.
I can buy myself flowers.
So who is it, Julie?
Miley Cyrus.
It's Miley Cyrus.
That's what I was going to say, but I
You had that, Peck.
I will. Download it. right now.
Actually, that is such a good solo dance party song. So yes.
Yeah,
that was Miley Cyrus. Flowers.
You would be in the locker room.
Okay, so for the Hall of Fame, I have to have a walkout song. Any suggestions? I mean, my theme.
What are you thinking? Yeah.
My theme song is Brick House.
Yeah, I'll be your brick house. I like that. I like
do
that.
Too.
That's old school.
Yeah. I do too.
But
just letting it all hang out. I'll be your brick. You know, everyone's gonna be like, "Who runs the world, girls? Who runs the world, girls?" That's a good one, but I feel like it's too predictable.
Lizzo, yeah, about damn time.
I'd say, ladies, get in formation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with Beyonce. Lizzo, about damn time, came to mind.
Ooh.
Give it a play. See how okay. See if it fits. But I think Brick House is kind of is fun. Where that's you.
Yeah.
Gotta do you.
That's a good song.
It's a curveball too.
But about damn time kind of sends a message.
Oh.
Wait. This the Hall of Fame. Get it out, Julie. The Hall of Fame is in Nashville, right?
Knoxville.
Yes, that's
Rocky
your home.
Top.
That's yeah. your home. Okay, so welcome to my house, baby. Kick control now. Hana, hana, hana. Come on, it's your house. This
that's
is my house.
Too. Okay.
Is that Florida?
Yeah, it's a Florida? Dude, though. We don't yeah. do dudes on, you know, this
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, it's a dude. You want a gal.
I'm thinking, Lizzo, it's about damn time.
Mm. Okay. Lynn, you're going to have to watch it. And if she starts walking up to that, you're going to have to take credit.
I'm going
to
go. Okay. I'm going to raise the roof. I'm going to raise the roof.
I may twerk all the way down the aisle.
I would like you to do the worm all the way down. Most pressing questions. Lynn.
My most pressing, out of every women's basketball player, past or present, who is in your starting five?
Ooh, my starting five.
I'm going to write this down.
Well, Dawn Staley's going to be my point guard.
Yeah.
I think that I'm going to have Katie Smith in her prime.
Mm-hmm. Ohio State, go Bucks.
Okay.
You got to have Cheryl Swoops.
Ooh, yeah.
Got to have Swoops. Then you got to have the tenacity of Cheryl Miller.
Oh, okay.
Now, who is my monster in the middle? Ooh. See, I'm torn. Candace Parker and Lisa Leslie.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have Lisa Leslie in there.
Yeah. So I like that rotation.
Okay, that's a good squad. Dawn Staley, Katie Smith, Cheryl Swoops, Cheryl Miller, and a tie between Candace Parker and Lisa Leslie. They'll split time.
Yeah. Because you can move them around, especially with today's game, like in their prime playing against and with the rules today, because you can't touch anybody. It's like, no foul. This is a non-contact sport.
Yeah.
But those women, they could get it done. Dawn could get it, you know, where it needs to be. Katie Smith can score it. Cheryl Swoops is going to take it from you. And Cheryl Miller's going to get in your head. And then you can't keep up with Lisa Leslie or Candace Parker.
Oh, that's
amazing. I could just talk. I could talk for another hour about that and going off in different directions. That was
and
awesome.
I also love the current Chelsea Gray. Y'all, she is the real deal. I get to cover the Aces during the WNBA season. I do their broadcasts, and I get to watch her every game. She's phenomenal.
They're going to be good.
Yeah, they are.
Same with New York. New York's going to be good.
Yeah, I can't wait to see those two teams go head-to-head. The two super teams is what they're calling them.
My most pressing seems not so pressing, given that really good most pressing. Mine, I kind of want to ditch.
Oh, come on.
Believe in yourself.
Okay, okay. If you had to choose, which Ville would you choose? Nash or Knox?
Nashville.
Oh!
I went to school in Nashville.
Yeah, grew up in Knoxville. It's
the country music mecca. Yeah. There are great restaurants in Nashville.
I was just there. I should have gotten in touch, Pat.
Oh,
I forgot you're there.
Shame on you.
I forgot you're there. I know. How'd I remember?
We could have tore it up.
All right, last segment, Peck, is high, low, cheer. The high of your career, the low of your career, and the cheer is for someone you're grateful who's helped you along the way.
Well, the high of my career has to be the national championship. And one of the reasons being is because, okay, the year before we won the national championship, I had accepted a job to leave, and I was going to the Orlando, start the Orlando Miracle.
Right.
And those group of women stayed so committed through that whole season, and they had been through so much. Katie Douglas, before her freshman year, had lost her dad to cancer. And we finished that game, and the ball is in her hands. Ukari Figgs had lost her grandmother. Stephanie White had turned her ankle with, like, I don't know, 4 minutes left to go in the game. It was like Hoosiers. It'd be a great movie.
Right. Yeah.
My low. I think my low would be getting fired at Florida after the previous year. I beat Tennessee and LSU when they were both ranked number one in the country the year before. And I graduated 5 seniors and I was rebuilding. But I don't know if that's a low or a cheer, because they weren't supporting us. And it's kind of like, okay, I'll go do something else.
Right. It's probably a blessing.
Yeah. And then the cheer, well, you know, the cheer has to go to Arlene Peck.
Peck.
Oh, my mama. Let me tell you, she is a blessing. When I graduated my senior year in college, she had a near fatal car accident and she survived that. Then after she recovers from that and I start playing basketball in Japan, she got diagnosed with colon cancer, stage 4, experimental drug. Thank God for the research for cancer, because she is 82 now. She's still here. She'll be at the Hall of Fame. And like, she is the one that always said, as long as there's time on the clock, you got a chance to win. And so all the way, even, you know, when I'm commentating games and there's only like 7 seconds left and there's a 4-point game, I'm like, got a shot. It could happen.
Yeah.
And I think that has to come from Miss Arlene.
Oh, congratulations, my friend, on all you've done.
Coaching,
broadcasting, Hall of Fame career in so many different ways. So thanks for taking the time with us. Always such a treat to catch up with you. Next time I'm going to crash you in Nashville and we are going to do Tootsies and Broadway.
Yeah. Tootsies, honky tonk, Dirk Bentley's, got some great restaurants.
I already told a bunch of girlfriends when I got back. I'm like, we gonna do Nashville next trip.
Oh yeah, we gotta do this again. This is fun.
Oh yes, we will, Peck. I think we should do it as a road trip.
Nashville, here we come.
They have those little bikes that you get on. Not little. They're like big bikes where they have like 5 people on each side with the bar in the middle.
Oh, and right. Pedaling. Yeah.
And then the music's blaring.
That's where we need to do an episode. That's
road trip.
Part 2 of Carolyn Peck.
Okay, dokie. Takeaways. I should do it in my Southern drawl. I don't know if I could do takeaways in my Southern drawl.
Well, you sort of have one already. That's the weird thing. You're from Southern California, and yet you have a little bit of a Southern lilt.
Have I never told you the story that that NBC when they hired me for the Olympics, the voice coach they gave me?
Yeah,
I had a voice coach. God, I love NBC. They're like, you're new to TV. We're going to give you a voice coach. I was like, what? And she goes, where are you from in the South? And I said, what are you talking about? I'm from like Southern California. Is that what you mean? She goes, no, you're from the South. I said, no, I'm not. She goes, where's your Southern accent from? I was like, I don't have a Southern accent. Turns out it was all those Southerners I played on the national team with. Sandy, Mia, Carla.
Cindy, it's your mama.
It's your mama. Call me. Okay, takeaways.
I loved hearing the origin story of the net. I had never heard that story. So good. And Tennessee's Passion Thompson, shout out to Passion. I wonder, Jules, what your thoughts are on it. Because I was thinking, is it that little piece of net, is it the power of belief passing it to someone? Was it the universe at play? Because it happened again.
The power of someone believing in you.
It happened again with Dawn Staley.
Yeah. So you have the power of someone believing in you and then passing on that power, you're paying it forward. Which, if we all did that in the universe, think of the power. Inspiring. It's this vicious cycle.
Vicious or you mean like
vicious in the most beautiful of ways.
Okay. Incredibly vicious.
Yeah, like vicious. Vicious awesomeness. And that was so cool to hear that by her doing that, you know, and then how touched she was that Dawn did it to every Division I Black coach, women's coach out there, which was so neat. And we heard that story on the pod with Dawn as well. My second takeaway is Carolyn and I both have awesome moms. Clearly, Fruity Judy, right on up there with number one in the world. Okay, questions permitted.
Question from at Maria Redoubty.
At Maria Redoubty, okay. Yes.
Lynn has such a great sports announcer podcaster voice, exclamation point. Was that always the case, or is it a learned skill? So I think that question is directed toward me.
I like how you self-selected.
Well, first I want to say to Maria, thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate what you said.
No, you need to say it like this, Lynn.
Oh. Thank you.
Well, Maria.
Right.
Long pause.
So this
thank you.
This leads me into my answer, because this Maria asked this question back in April of 2021, and it's been one I've thought to answer for a while. And 2 years
later. Wait, Maria asked this question in April of 2021, and you're bringing it to the pod in April of 2023?
Yeah.
What the hell, Sinky?
That's how long it took me to talk about myself. And here's part of it is that this question really hit me. Let's rein it in a little bit. I'm trying to be sincere here, Julie.
Okay. Thank you, Maria.
When
I want to hear this.
Yeah.
When
I worked in local news in Cleveland, the NBC affiliate, Channel 3 News, my hometown, as a reporter on air, I would get critiqued about my voice. In local news, it's not uncommon for reporters to sound like this, like anchors. And that was not my style. And I worked to try to just sound like myself. Because of the critiques and feedback I'd get from my managers, I got self-conscious about my voice. And I did work at it. However, what I would say is that this podcast has allowed me to find my voice and to sound actually like how I sound. And something I'll add is that it's a really humbling experience to edit audio of yourself. And in doing so, it's helped me come into my own. Because I can actually hear sometimes when I might be pushing a little too hard or holding back. And so it's been, seriously, this podcast has been a place for me for my own self-growth and becoming more secure and confident in myself and in my voice. So it was, you know, that this question was a deep cut for me, and I'm on the Dr. Colleen Hacker track of forever a work in progress. I'll just say that this podcast has had so much value for me when it comes to this respect and my voice.
You know what that makes me think? I should do more editing to discover how effing annoying I am. Well, because I am certain when I edit me, I'd be like, shut up. I do that just listening normally, so I can't even imagine. Let's do a slow clap for Lynn having to edit this. God, you deserve a medal.
Well,
that's a natural. You have a natural TV voice. You don't have this like nasally annoying voice like me.
Okay. I'm actually going to start going into my deeper modes to see if it's a little more enticing to listen to.
I would like to replace the word annoying. You've said that a few times over, you know, kind of over episodes.
I'm not going to ever replace annoying.
What about vicious awesomeness?
Vicious awesomeness. No. I'm pretty sure I'm pretty damn annoying sometimes. That is okay. I'm fine with being annoying.
The thing, though, is, and I'll peel back the curtain for the Dope Village, is that there are times, because I do edit a lot of audio with both of us, is that I sometimes do give you notes. And the thing that I really appreciate is that you're always receptive to them. You still haven't cut out your sniffling. In fact, this episode, I've edited out of some sniffles.
I know. I actually was just thinking I'm kind of nasally right now. I'm like congested. A little too much pollen in the air. It is Switzerland here still.
So, yeah. Thanks, Maria.
Okay. That was a good one. Thank you, Maria. 2 years later.
Yeah, 2 years later. It took me 2 years to answer it. I will add that I think even this season, I feel like I'm continuing again to come into my own with my voice and that I have a voice. So, yeah. Gonna use it.
All right, Dope Village, thank you as always for spending time with us. We are in our home stretch of season 9 and have some vicious awesomeness coming up as part of our guest, Becky Sauerbrunn. Becky Butter Sauerbrunn will join the podcast for the first time. And okay, full disclosure, we do have a lot of soccer players on the podcast this season, but Women's World Cup is just around the corner starting in July. So there's no apologies necessary, nor should there ever be any apologies. Anyways, then we've got Stu York. It's What Dreams Are Made Of. Brianna Stewart returning. Stewie is coming back on the pod. And as a bonus episode, it just so happens that the universe answered my request. I love when this happens. To finish the season with astronaut Nicole Mann in real life, IRL. We will be recording that live at the ESPNW New York City Summit on May 4th, so lots to look forward to. And we sure would appreciate it if you would subscribe and rate the podcast along with leaving a very viciously awesome comment on our Apple Podcast page. Thank you, as always, to Ally and Dick's Sporting Goods for their fabulous support, and of course to Kate Diaz for our theme music. And remember, as always, kids, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
As long as there's time on the clock, you got a chance to win.